This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
I was quite surprised when I got the word yesterday that Senator Joe Lieberman had passed away. Senator Joe Lieberman been on a guest on the show. I wouldn't quite call him a regular, but he's on been on, I'd say, half dozen times in the last 3 years. And this man is someone that I viewed as a real American patriot. This is a man who was defined by a love and a passion for, I'd say, four or five things. His family, especially his wife Hadassah, his country, which he loved, his state, which he loved, the Nutmeg State, his religion and his God. He was very proud Jew, and the state of Israel. He absolutely loved the state of Israel and would let that. And that dictated a lot of his policy choices over the years in a lengthy career in the U.S. Senate. Now, what do people know about Joe Lieberman? I think most people know he was the Democratic nominee for vice president running with Al Gore in the year 2000.
10 days ago, with courage and with friendship, Al Gore asked me to be his running mate. And I don't have to tell you that this has been a most extraordinary week for my family and me. There's an old saying that behind every successful man, there's a surprised mother-in-law.
And it really, if you think back at that election, it seems like ancient history now, but it was really, in the grand scheme of things, not long ago, 24 years ago, it was only a question of 537 votes, not 537,000, just 537 votes that made the difference in that election for Gore becoming president and Lieberman becoming the vice president. And a lot of people believe that Lieberman was put on the ticket because he was Jewish and would help get Jewish votes in Florida. Obviously, the story of the Palm Beach County butterfly ballot and the votes for Pat Buchanan and all the other things that went in to the aftermath of that election are well known. There have been books written about it, movies written about it, court cases about it. And ultimately, Gore and Lieberman did not end up getting elected. But you think, you play what if. What if Gore had won? You might have seen a situation where Lieberman could have become the first Jewish president. You don't know. I mean, it's impossible to know. But only 537 votes separated him between the presidents, but the him being a senator, which he remained, and the vice president. So then Lieberman, as was expected of a lot of people that are the nominee for vice president, then runs for president himself 4 years later. Oh, well, let's go back. Do you remember how Joe Lieberman first got elected to the U.S. Senate? There are three ways to get to the U.S. Senate. There's the easy way, which is the way that I'd like to go, which is somebody appoints you. The governor of a state appoints you to the U.S. Senate. That's how Gillibrand got there. Then there's the slightly more difficult way, which is you win an open seat for U.S. Senate. There's no incumbent and you run in an open election and you win. And then there's the most challenging way to go to the U.S. Senate, and that is to beat an incumbent. And Lieberman did that. Lieberman beat an incumbent. It was 1988, I believe. And the incumbent senator was a liberal Republican who later became an independent, oddly enough. We'll talk about that later. I talked about him when he died as well. A liberal Republican by the name of Lowell Weicker. Lowell Weicker was a thorn in the side of both Nixon and Reagan, and he was not viewed positively by the conservative movement in the state of Connecticut or around the country. And when Bob Grant used to love to tell this story, how in 1988, he was at a conservative function on election night, and they're monitoring the returns in it was a very conservative group, a Republican group of some sort. They were monitoring the returns in all the elections, and everybody was happy that George H.W. Bush was going to win the presidency. And then when the news came across the screen that Lowell Weicker was going to lose, Bob Grant told the story of how everybody, in spite of the fact that there was not a Democrat in this building, everybody started applauding and cheering wildly just because they hated Lowell Weicker. And that was, that year, that was the biggest political upset. And he was backed. Lieberman was backed by a coalition of Democrats and independents, but he had support from conservative Republicans, including William F. Buckley Jr. You know, I remember, you know, William F. Buckley Jr. was so conservative. How conservative was he? William F. Buckley Jr. was so conservative. I remember he was on Hannity and Combs one night, and either Hannity or Combs asked him, have you ever voted for a Democrat? And Buckley compared the question to being asked if he'd ever cheated on his wife, and he couldn't name a single Democrat that he'd ever voted for. Well, Buckley did vote for, or at least support, Joe Lieberman. They were incredibly disappointed in Lowell Weicker's liberal voting record and his style. He received a lot of support from the Cuban-American community, which was very unhappy with Weicker. Right, and after that, in the Senate, Lieberman always remained firmly anti-Castro. So then once he was in the Senate, he largely proved to be a pretty conventional liberal Democrat, liberal by 1990 standards, not liberal by 2020 standards. And he focused on a number of issues that were, you know, pretty typical. He would focus on the economy. He would focus on, foreign policy, very into, as I mentioned, the state of Israel. But he also took on the issue of violent video games. He led a crusade against violent video games in the 90s. And basically, his initiatives against violence in video games are really considered the chief impetus behind the establishment of a video game rating system. And I remember at the time that he ran for vice president, you had conservatives say, I remember one specifically, Gary Oldman, who's pretty conservative, was asked when he was promoting the movie The Contender, if you could vote for anyone, who would you vote for? And he said, you know, my ideal ticket is Dick Cheney and Joe Lieberman. And I remember people that were of a more libertarian bent. I'm thinking of Jerry the King Lawler on, WWF Monday Night Raw at the time, said he would never vote for Gore and Lieberman because of how active they were in censorship. And they might as well be a member of, and they had this fictitious group that would that was against anything dirty on television that was displayed in the WWF. And Lawler said, oh, I could never vote for Joe Lieberman because of his work trying to censor everything. So he did always have a little bit of a socially conservative bent. And I say a little bit of a socially conservative bent because, you know, on issues like abortion and affirmative action, he largely was typically in lockstep with the stereotypical Democratic position. And then you remember, Gore got the most votes in the year 2000. And generally, when you get the most votes, you try again to run for president in the future. And sometimes you're successful, as Grover Cleveland can tell you, or others. So a lot of people were viewing both Gore and Lieberman as presidential candidates in 2004. And Lieberman, to his credit, did something that Mike Pence didn't do, that Nikki Haley didn't do, and that scores of others these days don't do, is he demonstrated loyalty to Gore. He said, look, I'm not going to run against Al Gore. Gore picked me to be vice president. I'm not running against him. And that's something that that's a lesson in loyalty that I think people like Mike Pence can learn. Gore ultimately decides not to run, and Lieberman runs for president, does not catch fire at all, even in New England, in states like New Hampshire. This was a primary process really focused on people like Howard Dean, John F. Kerry, John Edwards. Those were the candidates that largely dominated the conversation. But and he ends up dropping out shortly after New Hampshire. And then a lot of people were unhappy with him because of things that he had done in the Senate, namely on foreign policy. Now, the things that I'll say about Joe Lieberman when it came to, I disagreed with him on almost everything when it came to foreign policy. He was such a cheerleader of the war in Iraq. I think he's been a cheerleader of almost every war, honestly. I mean, he was not quite as bad as John McCain and Lindsey Graham, but almost as bad. He was basically a typical neocon when it came to foreign policy. But unlike George W. Bush, who I have a great deal of political animosity for and antipathy towards, I don't have an issue with him on a personal basis, but Joe Lieberman was a brilliant man, a true intellect. He was also an incredibly hard worker. He was also one of the people in politics that probably had the most integrity of anyone that I had ever met. And he was honest. So he was smart. He was hardworking. He was honest. He had integrity. And his word meant something. But his positions on things like the war in Iraq did alienate him from the base of the Democratic primary of the Democratic Party. That is the days, you might remember these days, long, long ago, where the Democratic primary electorate was against intervening in foreign wars and starting foreign wars instead of the Republican primary electorate being against intervening in foreign wars. Now things have sort of switched. So because of his support for things like the war in Iraq, he faced a very tough primary challenge. And he was primaried by Ned Lamont in 2006 when Lamont was running for re-election. And, excuse me, when Lieberman was running for re-election. And Lamont actually beats him in the Democratic primary in 2006. So Lieberman does what at that point was the unthinkable, what had been done only a handful of times throughout American history. Even though he lost the primary, he says he's going to run for re-election anyway as an independent. And he does. Starts his own party, gets support from independents, moderates, moderate Democrats, and Republicans. I remember Mike Bloomberg, who was a Republican at the time, mobilized a whole force in terms of fundraising and in terms of volunteers to support Lieberman's effort as an independent candidate in Connecticut. And he does the unthinkable. He wins as an independent candidate after losing the Democratic primary.
We will find within ourselves an uncommon power to defeat the enemies that threaten us, to surmount all the challenges we face here at home, and to secure and improve our country for generations to come. This is the opportunity and responsibility that you, the voters of Connecticut, have generously given me today. You know, my name was on the bottom of the ballot. Did you know that? Yeah. You found it. Bottom of the ballot, so it seems only fitting that I thank you from the bottom of my heart.
And you really got the sense with Joe Lieberman that he meant that stuff. Now, that that had really happened so infrequently in the U.S. Senate. As I mentioned, when he was on the show on Friday, there have only been three people in this century, maybe four. I think either three or four, depending if you count Lisa Murkowski. There have been only three or four people this century that have gotten elected to the U.S. Senate as an independent. And one is, I'm not going to count Bernie Sanders because he was not elected really as an independent. The Democratic Party didn't run someone. I'm talking about a situation where the Republicans ran someone, the Democrats ran someone, and an independent actually won. It happened in Maine with Angus King. It happened with Joe Lieberman. And I guess you could say it happened with Lisa Murkowski when she ran as a write-in in 2010. So Lieberman becomes, he continues to caucus with the Democrats, but becomes even more independent-minded and ends up voting even more with the Republicans on foreign policy. So it was no surprise when his friend John McCain ends up running for president and becomes the Republican nominee in 2008 that he strongly considers Joe Lieberman as his vice presidential candidate. Ultimately, he was told he needed to shore up his right flank, and he ended up picking Sarah Palin instead. But it did not diminish Lieberman's enthusiasm for McCain. Lieberman went all over the country campaigning for John McCain, continues to serve in the U.S. Senate with a great deal of distinction and providing an independent perspective on a whole bunch of issues. And on foreign policy, Republicans and especially the neocons, they loved him. Larry Kudlow used to say all the time in those days that if the next president was a Republican, they should appoint Joe Lieberman as Secretary of Defense. Here's a little bit of his final address to Congress in 2012 when he completed that six-year term that he was elected to in 2006.
I know that my own story repeats itself today in millions of American families and their children. And as long as that is so, I know that our best days as a country are still ahead of us. And so, Mr. President, I will end my remarks today where our country began a long time ago, with a dream and a prayer that God will continue to bless the United States of America.
So then he remains very active. He joined a law firm, practiced law, was very active with the No Labels movement. And he was very vocal about what he perceived to be the lurching to the left of the Democratic primary. He was a believer in centrism. He didn't buy what they call progressivism today at all, and spoke out about it at length. I remember in 2018 when Joe Crowley, who was one of the most powerful members of the Democratic House leadership at the time, was defeated in the Democratic primary by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, a very similar situation to what happened with Joe Lieberman being defeated by Ned Lamont. Lieberman wrote an op-ed in the, I think it was the Wall Street Journal, saying that Crowley should do what Lieberman did and run as a third-party candidate because Crowley had a third-party line. Crowley was on the line of the Working Families Party. He could have done that. Crowley did not do so, didn't campaign, didn't run, and basically threw in the towel as soon as he was defeated by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in the primary. One wonders how different history might be today if Crowley had listened to Joe Lieberman with his suggestion back in 2018. So then as the No Labels movement picks up steam, he becomes largely the face of the No Labels movement. His title was founding chairman, and he was all about trying to offer the voters an alternative to Biden and Trump. I spoke about this with him many times, including January of last year.
I'm privileged to be the founding chair of a group called No Labels, meaning don't pin Democrat or Republican on yourself as if those labels are what matters most. What matters most is you're an American. You were elected to Congress. You got a responsibility to your country and your constituents. And we have bipartisan groups in both houses of Congress, and they're going to be working to try to come up with some proposals that can pass, just as they did in the last 2 years, bipartisan infrastructure reform.
That's just the legislative aspect of it. That was back in January of last year. And he talked about what was missing in politics, which was a sense of compromise.
The way our system has, our democratic system, our republic has worked since the founding in the 18th century is by people who have been elected to represent the American people in Washington with differences of opinion, meeting in the center, talking respectfully, looking for ways that they can find common ground, almost always requiring compromises, and then doing that to get something done for the people who are good enough to send them there. But that doesn't happen much anymore. I mean, somebody said to me not so long ago, people in one party would say the other party was wrong on a given matter. Today, they say the other party is evil. And that's just not right. It's not what America is supposed to be about.
I think he was absolutely right about that. And I've talked about this a great deal. We don't have the loyal opposition anymore. It's not enough to think, and this is one of the things that we really bonded so much over the years. And, you know, I don't want to over-exaggerate the nature of our relationship. I certainly wouldn't call him a friend. I think I met him in person maybe six times throughout my life, and at least two of those times were for less than 30 seconds. But one of the things that I felt bonded us in our radio conversations over the years was the fact that you can disagree with someone and still be friends with someone. These days, you have Democrats that don't just disagree with Republicans. They want to kill Republicans. You have Republicans that don't view Democrats as the loyal opposition. They view them as evil. And I think that sense of being a gentleman, of having a drink with the opposition at the end of the day, not that Lieberman was a drinker, is missing in politics today. And I think it's to the detriment of the country. Lieberman, as lugubrious as he might sound at times, had a bit of a sense of humor. And I put that to the test when we spoke back in September because of the nature of the way I pronounce his home state. I always call the state that he hails from Connecticut. And a lot of listeners have an issue with that. And I brought that up with him.
First and foremost, though, I often pronounce the name of the Nutmeg State as Connecticut. Would that make me unwelcome in your home state? Do you have a problem with me saying Connecticut?
No. There's a certain logic to it, even right, though we all say Connecticut. You know, I'll never forget when I was running for vice president, and one day we were in that state just south of Washington State. And I said in my rally speech how great it was to be in Oregon. And everybody shouted back, "It's Oregon." And so, oh, you got to be careful, friend.
I would never have known it was Oregon either. Absolutely not. So then we spoke on Friday, and I asked him what the story with No Labels is now. Now, we've been talking about all these No Labels candidates. They've been turned down by everybody. They were turned down by Joe Manchin. They were turned down by Larry Hogan. They were even turned down by Jeff Duncan. When I saw the report that Jeff Duncan was going to be the No Labels presidential candidate, you know what I said? I said, "Who's Jeff Duncan?" So, and he turned them down. So I said to Senator Lieberman, "What's going on with these guys? What are you guys actually going to be doing?" And this is what he said on Friday.
We know that you don't want to have to choose again between Trump and Biden. And as you said, Frank, on every poll we see the great majority of the American people, 60, 70% say they don't want this to be just Trump and Biden again. It's not good for the country. More partisanship, more nastiness. Nothing's going to change. So we waited, but we said we don't know. We got to wait until after Super Tuesday. It could be one or another of them will drop out, or they'll be defeated in the primary. Well, Super Tuesday came and went. They're both there. So we went to our 800 delegate rank and file grassroots No Labels constituent assembly and said, "Do you want us to go forward?" They said, "Yes." And what does that mean? We're interviewing candidates now. We formed something we call a country over party committee. Really, it's a nominating committee. I'm on it. We're talking to candidates, and hopefully we'll come up with a good bipartisan ticket. Unusual. Never had it since Lincoln and Johnson in 1864, but we think the country is crying out for that right now. And
And that's where No Labels is now. And that's the latest as of our conversation Friday. And I asked him, would you run for president yourself? You're a prominent Democrat. Why not partner with a Republican and really shake things up?
You might be the No Labels person with the most name recognition on a national basis right now. Is there any chance that you might be the candidate?
Oh, I'm going to quickly answer the second question first. No chance. I've gone beyond my running days and happy to be part of this organization. Frankly, happy to try to shake up the political system. I keep thinking of a great line that Jefferson wrote, I believe, to Madison in a letter early in our history, where he said that he thought in American history there would be a need every now and then for what he called a little political rebellion, which would be as important in politics as big storms are in nature. In other words, to clear out the dead wood. Boy, that's where we are now. We need such a storm. So, but here's the problem. We talk to a lot of people. They really support what we're doing. But, you know, they look at the nastiness of politics today, and they see that the Democratic Party has formed a committee of lawyers to try to keep not only No Labels, but Cornel West, RFK Jr., Jill Stein off the ballot. They don't want third-party competition for what a professor at Harvard calls the duopoly, a Republican-Democrat duopoly of American politics. And that's just wrong. The people deserve to have as many choices as can get on the ballot. But it is hard to convince people to step out there into that mess.
That it is. And I say that as someone that has worked the better part of my life in the independent political sphere. And it's very difficult to convince people to step out that Republican and Democratic box that they've conditioned themselves to remain in. So if you want to comment on the life and times of Joe Lieberman, be my guest, 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-9222. In a moment, not only will I take your calls, but we'll get into how Joe Lieberman actually passed away. And this is something that we all need to be incredibly aware of. We'll get into it straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This is Greg Kelly. To my friends in the construction business, if you've been injured on the job, make just one call to the Construction Accident Lawyers at the law offices of Darren T. Moore. With hundreds of five-star reviews, they fight for more justice for every client and have secured millions of dollars in compensation for New York construction workers. Call 888-444-ATTY. That's 888-444-2889 for a free consultation. More diligence, more persistence, and more justice.
Prior results don't guarantee similar outcomes.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
I don't know why I said the things I said. Pride's like a knife, it can cut deep inside. Words are like weapons, they wound sometimes. I didn't really mean to hurt you. I didn't want to see you go. I know I made you cry.
Turning back time. This is a request from our listener of the week, Ray in Baltimore, who did a great job reporting to us on the building collapse. All right. Hey, this is the last thing I'll say about Senator. What did I say? Building collapse? Okay, bridge collapse. This is the last thing I'll say about Senator Lieberman, then I'll take your calls, 800-848-9222, whatever you want to comment on, be my guest. Joe Lieberman, only 82 years old, and I don't think he was an old 82. He died due to complications from a fall. He fell down. He didn't have cancer. He wasn't assaulted, wasn't murdered. He fell and had complications due to a fall. I think this is crazy. I mean, in some ways, you can understand something like him being killed by a crazed Palestinian supporter, right? Or dying of cancer, God forbid. He fell down. In my view, this is such a pointless death. And unfortunately, it is all too common. I have friends that have suffered years worth of medical injuries from falls. I have friends that have, in some cases, died because of complications due to falls. Americans are falling down like crazy. I really do think one of the most important radio segments I've ever done was with safety expert Russell Kensior, who runs the National Floor Safety Institute. And we spoke, I guess maybe about a year ago, about how falls, how prevalent they are in this country, and how they're so bad that they're really having an impact on the economy.
Frank, it's now 42,000
deaths. Wow.
And deaths. And 100...
I'm going to play you the rest of his comment. Think about that. There are 42,000 people dying from falls every year. This is totally preventable. Totally preventable. I mean, I know people will say, oh, what are you going to do? Just not fall down? Avoid the banana peels? There's so much that we can do. Make sure your floors are, and again, I'm not going to repeat all the instances that we did in this interview, but it's so important. There's just so many things that you can do, from footwear to floors to being careful to everything. Do whatever you can to avoid these.
Frank, it's now 42,000
deaths. Wow.
And deaths. And 100, if you add it all up, not just medical coverage, but insurance, litigation, everything. You add it up, it's about $150 billion, that's with a B, dollars a year. That's a Gulf War expenditure every year. It's massive. And it affects everybody. Every time we go to the supermarket, every time we go to buy food, at a restaurant, it's reflected in the cost of the products that we're buying and we're using, because the number of just the sheer volume is absolutely overwhelming. The Centers for Disease Control estimate about 6 million people go to the emergency room each year as a result of a fall.
Oh, to me, that's crazy. 6 million people. Russell Kensior talked about some of the other instances of the problems with falls. You alluded to the fact that a lot of the victims here, of both the deaths and the injuries, are mostly older folks. How old are we talking about?
Well, it begins at about age 70, when falls become the leading cause of accidental injury and death. Believe it or not, Frank, when you hit 70, you're most likely, in terms of your odds of dying from a fall.
This is a big issue for the elderly. Please be careful. All right. 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. Let me begin with Robin in a community that I just love, Cape May, New Jersey. Hi, Robin.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great. You're not that Mega Millions winner at the Jersey Shore, are you?
No, I drove through Neptune to get here, but no.
Got it. Okay, I have to ask. I appreciate it.
No, I just wanted to say Joe Lieberman dying, he was just such a great man, and I agree with everything you've said. I've just been listening to your reflections on him, and what a great man. And then I just ended up calling just because I'm in Cape May, and I know you like it here.
Absolutely. So you're on vacation down there?
No, my mom lives here.
Oh, great. Okay. What's your favorite restaurant down there?
Acara.
Acara. That's Italian, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's a great spot. I like a car. My wife and I have been there several times. That's a great spot.
Yeah, it's great. And everything down here is just so beautiful. My mom, my stepfather just passed away.
Oh.
I'm down here more often than normal. My husband said, why don't you just stay there this summer? I'm like, you know what? I think I will.
Well, I'm sorry to hear about your stepfather, but maybe I'll see you down there when we're down there this summer, Robin.
I might find you.
I hope you do. I'll be decked out in the other side of midnight gear, believe me. Thank you. 800-848-9222. Dave is in the Bronx. Hi, Dave.
How are you, Frank? Listen, The Lieberman probably did the stranger thing. He ran for the Senate the same year that he ran for vice president.
Right,
and
in 2000.
He won that election. Yeah, I don't understand how he could do that. But and obviously, if he became, you know, in the old days with the Senate, the state's legislature obviously appointed them. So many of them became secretaries or went here and went back in the Senate when they decided. So it was no big deal. But this was also Bloomberg sponsored him big time when he ran as an independent.
Right,
he gave him a
that.
Lot of money.
That's true. And
well, he did. I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Yeah, and another former New York mayor, Rudy Giuliani, went out there and campaigned for him, as did, I think, even people like Newt Gingrich. So he really did build a coalition of, moderate Democrats, conservative Democrats, conservative Republicans, and independents. So, yeah, that's true.
Orthodox Jew, he lived in Riverdale. He lived up in the Bronx, which is where only the Jews are. Big conclave only, but there are not too many more. But he's to be missed. I agree. Very commendable.
Yeah, thank you, Dave. And I want to be clear. You know, again, I disagreed with him on the war in Iraq. I'm sure he was all about this war in Ukraine. Every time I would hear him talk about Middle East foreign policy over the last 15 years, his solution was almost always bomb Iran. I don't think that's a good solution, and I've explained why. But I could disagree with Joe Lieberman and still have a lot of respect for him as a person and as a human being. 800-848-9222. Lucy is in Maryland. Hi, Lucy.
Hi. I was calling because I used to live in Connecticut.
Oh.
And I was told that his birthday was February 24, 1939, which would make him 85. They reported today he was 82. So I thought you might want to look that up and see.
Yeah, I mean, everything I've seen has him being born in February of 1942. But I wasn't there. And unlike the people that were able to track down President Obama's birth certificate, I'm not going to demand that Hadassah, produce a copy of Joe Lieberman's long form birth certificate. 800-848-9222. Michael is in Manhattan. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Frank. I actually was going to talk about Robert Kennedy, but first I want to talk about falls, because you mentioned some falls of elderly people. You motivated me to go to fall prevention groups at the our local senior center.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that.
And I took a fall about a year ago in my house. Fortunately, I wasn't seriously injured. But I wanted to talk about Robert Kennedy. You had mentioned him as possible third-party candidate.
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain nostalgia about the name Kennedy because of his uncle, John F. Kennedy, and his father was also called Robert Kennedy.
Right.
There's a certain nostalgia about them. So a lot of people, including myself, are not really enthusiastic about Biden or Trump.
Yeah, I think you're not alone, Michael. I mean, I think most of the people that are fired up to vote for President Biden, they're not necessarily fired up to vote for President Biden. They're fired up to vote against President Trump because they don't like President Trump. President Trump does have an enthusiastic cadre of supporters, but I'd say it's about maybe 25-30% of the country. A lot of other people are going to end up voting for him because they prefer him to the Democratic alternative. So they're two very unpopular major party candidates. So I think there's a wide gulf of folks like you that are reachable for someone. I don't know who that someone is, whether it's Kennedy or the No Labels candidate or someone else.
Well, the problem with me is that I'm 81 years old. I've been a Democratic supporter for 81 years. I was raised by my parents to believe in the Democrats, but I'm also concerned about the fact that the Middle East, I know I'm switching subjects, but the Middle East is a darkening situation in the Middle East where there's a very real danger that the Middle East could be a trigger for an escalation into, God forbid, World War III.
Well, I mean, I don't think you're wrong, Michael, and I think Eastern Europe, the same thing could be said there as well. Michael, thank you. I want to try and get in a couple of other people here as well. 800-848-9222. Joan is in New York. Hi there, Joan.
Oh, hi, Frank. Just wanted to say something in terms of Al Gore and Joe Lieberman. Not too many people actually know that, in fact, they did win the election. It's just that we didn't find it out until September of 2001. You remember those butterfly ballots with the hanging chads and the dimple chads? A bunch of ballots that were never counted. And there was what they called a consortium of six newspapers,
right,
including
sure.
The New York Times, Miami Herald, that went down and took those ballots and counted them every which way, six different ways. The hanging chads hanging by one corner or by two corners, or the dimple chads, remember, the pregnant
yeah,
chads.
Yeah, I remember. It's all about intent of the voter, Joan. Thank you. And there were some analyses. Yeah, thank you, John. Again, I don't. It's 24 years ago. I don't necessarily want to relitigate the 2000 election, but there were several post-election analyses which showed that if the votes in Florida had been accurately counted, Gore would have won the state, and Lieberman by extension. And these, most of those analyses, they took into account discarded ballots, uncounted provisional ballots, and voter intent. There were, I think, there was at least one post-election autopsy which showed that Bush would have won. But ultimately, the official scoreboard had Gore down by 537 votes. Now, we can discuss all the aspects of the people that weren't allowed to vote. We can discuss the aspects of the people that voted for Pat Buchanan, thinking that they were voting for Al Gore. There's a lot of that. A lot of people like to blame my hero, Ralph Nader, for that election. I don't play that game, but some other people do. 800-848-9222. Jersey June. Hello.
Yeah. Hi, Frank.
Hi.
First of all, very, very sad and shocked at the loss of Joe Lieberman. My daughter went to school, to high school in Connecticut, and we got to know him there. And then I met him at an event in New York also, and I invited him to dinner at his favorite deli in New Jersey. And he said, yes, call me. We're going to meet. And I didn't jump on it, and I was going to do it this year, and now I feel terrible.
Oh. What deli was it?
Noah's Ark.
Noah's Ark. Well,
he loved to eat there. And I said, I'm going to meet you. I'm going to treat you for dinner. He said, sure. And he's such a nice guy. Every adjective you said was correct. He's a humble, fine human being.
And very intelligent and very kind, June, which I don't think you could say enough about. June, thank you. I appreciate that. All right. We'll continue with your calls in a moment. 800-848-9222 straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight. Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
When the twilight is gone, and no songbirds are singing, when the twilight is gone, you come into my heart, and here in my heart you will stay while I pray.
My Prayer by the Platters. You know, this was actually a birthday bumper music selection by my Aunt Madeline, who celebrated her birthday yesterday. I cut her a break and let her get her song selections in a day late because she is my godmother. Hopefully you had a happy birthday, Aunt Madeline. All right, 800-848-9222. Hey, speaking of birthdays, so I made dinner for Rachel yesterday. Went pretty well, pretty well. I made some oven-roasted salmon. Now, we get the wild salmon from our local fish store. This fish is so good and so fresh that it's very difficult to screw up. So we did that, and then we did a side of some pierogies and some asparagus. Now, I made the asparagus. I sautéed it and just put a little salt and pepper in there. That's really it. And then I read some recipes about what you're supposed to do with asparagus, and they all say cut the ends off. So what I did was I cut the ends off, those white ends that are kind of hard. I cut them off. And we start eating, and my wife takes a little bit, a bite of the asparagus, and she says, "Did you put a lot of salt in here?" I said, "No," which was true. I didn't put in a lot of salt, just a dash. I'm thinking, "Oh, no, here we go. I screwed up the asparagus." And essentially what she said is, see, what you're supposed to do with the asparagus is there's a natural break in every one of these asparagus stalks, and that's the point where you're supposed to remove it. And I said, oh, I didn't do that. A couple of them broke on their own. She said, yes, they know how they're supposed to be cooked. They break at the natural point. I said, I just chopped off the ends. And apparently she still had some of those hard parts, and those were the parts that were absorbing a lot of the salt, pepper, and oil. So the rest of the asparagus stalk, thankfully, was fine once you would take off that end that she didn't like. But I think it went pretty well. We did get a pecan pie from Dr. Joe Gilotti, who was on this show Friday along with Senator Joe Lieberman. Very kind of Dr. Gilotti. So we stuck a candle in there and sang happy birthday afterwards. And we brought in the surplus pecan pie here to the radio station. Matt Blaze, did you have an opportunity to try the pecan pie?
I did not, but Elias did, and he is raving about
it. It's really terrific. Did you try it, Tony?
No, I'm going to do it after the break.
So my wife said we did it the right way. I heated mine up. She didn't heat hers up. We did it the right way. Well, I did it the right way in that I heated it up, and then we had a little bit of vanilla ice cream, one scoop of vanilla ice cream, and then some whipped cream on there, which my wife often calls Cool Whip. But, of course, I say something wrong and she gives me a hard time. Well, that's a story for another day. But anyway, so I thought it was terrific. I thought it was very good. My wife actually said that was the first time that she had ever tried pecan pie. And she really liked the pecan part, but she wasn't sure if the kind of the gel-looking part of it beneath the nut was how it was supposed to taste. I tried some, and I assured her that, yes, it was. So I loved it, and she really liked it. We brought in some samples for everybody else to try as well. 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Elizabeth. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hi, how are you?
I'm so good. Even my shadows have their own late-night talk show.
No, but I have to tell you, because I'm very athletic. I still horseback ride. I do a lot of different things. You may even know my husband, Tino of Tino's. But I have a walker in my apartment.
Tino's?
I fell, and I developed what they call an old lady's hip fracture. I dance. The old lady's hip fracture is a mambo. When you walk and you put weight on the pelvis, doesn't it's the break is always there. It's there forever. So when you walk, if you put any pressure on one side, in my case is the left side, I do merengue. But in my apartment, I have a walker. And that's why I called. It's very important for older people like myself. I'm 82. I may do all kinds of things outside, but in the apartment, I always use a walker. And it makes a huge difference. It gives you the balance. When you wake up, you're a little groggy, you're a little sleepy. You put that walker right near your bed. You get up, you use the walker, you go back, and it doesn't matter what you do during the day. It makes no difference at all. But I said I really thought making the suggestion of using a walker would be helpful to you, to the, everybody else that was.
All right. Well, I'm glad. Thank you, Elizabeth. Good luck to you, and make sure, you know, be careful out there on the dance floor. But I can't speak to that. I don't know if that's the best thing. It sounds reasonable the way Elizabeth said. You know who we should invite back? Bob Eubanks. Bob Eubanks, who was the host of the Newlywed Game and a bunch of other game shows. He is passionate about helping people avoid falls and balance. And he has this device. I don't remember what it's called, but it's designed to improve people's balance. And apparently it's worked for him. It's worked for a lot of other people. I'm going to reach out to Bob Eubanks, see if we can't get him on next week to talk about that and a bunch of other things. All right. Those of you that are on hold, I will make an effort to get to you. And still a lot of fun, exciting, interesting subjects to get to before it's all said and done. Meantime, keep asking questions.